Thank you. The Senate panel is missing one member. Senator Donnelly had to return home. His father suffered a heart attack, and so our prayers go with him and hope he returns shortly. But he's done a great deal of work on this, and I feel bad that I've not had an opportunity to really be briefed by him, other than a very short conversation that we've had about it. Laura and I have tried to talk about it a little bit, too. Have you had a chance to review the work that Donnelly did, Senator Donnelly did with Jack?
Mr. Chairman, I did it just up to a point where I reached the conclusion that we couldn't consider this amendment because it's outside of the scope of our limited free conference.
Well, that's what I was just asking him while you were chatting with Representative Mackey. The only provisions that are outside are those that were highlighted on the amendment, and that's page 2, lines 9 through 26, and page 3, lines 3 through 25. And all they really relate to, and Jack can explain this better than I, was the senator's concerns about juveniles involving weapons charges on school grounds and whether or not those would be allowed to go to a youth advisory panel. It probably is an area that, relative to the significance of the other provisions, we could probably get by without it, I suppose. I'd, on behalf of Senator Donnelly, I'd certainly like to offer it. We're at a recess right now. I can go get additional authority if I need to.
The provision, then, are we still addressing the automatic waivers?
No, this is not an automatic waiver situation. His concern is that they're outside of anything in either of the two bills that passed, the House version or the Senate version. He is concerned about situations where kids are bringing weapons to school or on school grounds. The two crimes involved are misconduct involving weapons in the second degree, a B felony, and misconduct involving weapons in the third degree, a C felony. So neither one of those is picked up under the automatic waiver provision.
In anybody's version?
In either version. Okay. What he's concerned about also is that since those kinds of crimes may be informally adjudicated, that is to say they can be turned over to the agency, the Department of Health and Social Services, to be taken care of, or can be handled more formally, but using a youth advisory panel, advising a judge, he wants to make sure that those opportunities are not present for those kinds of charges. In other words, they would have to go to the court and be disposed of in a formal way, either a hearing by the judge to determine whether there is grounds to find the juvenile a delinquent, or if it fits other standards, whether the juvenile should be treated as an adult under the regular process for moving a child or a minor along to adult court, not in an automatic waiver situation. What he's trying to do is close off the possibility that many of these things will be handled informally, with little or no punishment attaching, meaningful punishment attaching, is the way he put it to me.
Without some other really aggravating circumstances of past criminal behavior or something, I find it hard to imagine that a kid bringing a gun to school is going to end up in a waiver to adult court.
That is an option, but that is not his principal concern. His concern is how it's handled on the informal side.
With right. that in mind, I wonder why we're dealing with it in this bill. I mean, this is a waiver bill. You know, so it's a great idea, but what are we doing with it here?
No, I'm just throwing it out for discussion, and because it was somewhat unique, I wanted to get it out of the way first, if we could. Yeah. Representative Mackey, go
ahead. If a juvenile brings guns on a school ground, and the judge can decide to waive it as it is right now, right?
Yes.
And if the seriousness of it or whatever warrants
If the kid is deemed not amenable to supervision,
to treatment
under 4710, it can be moved along into the adult.
That would really take a serious case, I would think. I can't imagine. I mean, I've watched judges leave the juvenile in juvenile court on murders. I mean, so bringing a gun to school might not be as heinous as some of the other things that I've seen them do. So.
And that's what I'm saying. With that in mind, then whether or not that crime that doesn't fall within the purview of this bill in the first place does or doesn't go to a youth court.
Yeah. Senator Representative Mackey.
With all due respect to the senator, unfortunately he's not here to answer this himself, but my understanding is, and I realize we have powers of free conference, but my understanding is we're going to try to work out the differences between the two versions, and we needed the free conference to be able to do that. To me, this is a new area that has not been heard by a committee process or by anybody other than in the form of a new, and regardless of the sponsor, I would make that same statement as a matter of policy. I would kind of discourage this kind of a thing that hasn't even had a chance to, other than those that may have a copy of it, most people are not aware of this being potentially in this bill. Having said that, I'll stop there.
Well, I think there's one other point, too, that I know Senator Lehman wanted to make, and that is that we've got an additional bill that I believe passed out of your house, came over. Is it already in the Senate?
We have, I think, two vehicles where I think we might be able to deal with this.
We
one is the Con Bundy bill, and the other is my juvenile weapons bill, which is Symbol 237. Either one, I think, are related to this.
I get a quorum anymore. I haven't had one for about a week and a half now. But we're attempting to restructure Lauren's bill on juvenile weapons. We might be able to fit it in there. Or Representative Bundy's bill might be another good vehicle to put it in. We'll have to check the title. But
this is an act relating to the possession of weapons within the grounds of or on the parking lot of preschools, elementary, junior high, and secondary schools.
Well, that's perfect.
So I think it fits.
And we have this.
That's yours?
Yeah. No, it came from the House.
From the House. That's
Representative
Bundy's bill.
The title will allow the amendment. I think we can pick this up and then send it back. And it's
right. So we thought that would also be available if you didn't want to do it here. So, is there somebody here, by the way, from Senator Donnelly's office? Okay. If you had staff here, we'd be happy to have them sit up here at the table and help us. So that's no problem. Well, with that out of the way, maybe we could move now to the other items suggested. Right ahead, Representative.
Chairman, I think you all have a copy of an amendment dated 4/12/94 from Mr. Chenoweth, A.2B. This was, with all due effort, about as much as I could do in trying to discuss with members who voted on the floor of the House to only put into the automatic waiver provision the 3 degrees of murder. This was about as much expansion from that position towards the Senate version that I could get. What it does include is mainly the provisions that I did discuss with your bill sponsor. One, it would take into effect all unclassified felonies with a couple of exceptions. I would be suggesting that we remove A as an exception because it really is redundant.
Yeah.
So that would still be covered?
Yes.
Yes.
Maybe automatic waiver for kidnapping.
Well, what this A considers is that it would be an exception because it is an affirmative defense if the child is under 18 and the kidnapping was for the purposes to retain or reestablish custody. But it's already an affirmative defense, so we don't have to accept it.
Right.
That's what I'm thinking. So
it's kind
B,
of a double positive
yeah.
instead of a double negative. Yeah.
B would become A and C would be. We would be accepting sexual abuse of a minor in the first degree. Sexual abuse of a minor in the first degree is not forcible rape. It is the old statutory rape, considering that the minor cannot give consent, so it is rape. But it's those offenses where the offender is 3 years older. Had a hard time with some members on the House
right.
side thinking that this should be an automatic waiver. Most certainly there would be situations in this category that a court may want to consider for waiver, and this bill certainly would allow that. It would preclude it being an automatic waiver in that situation, but at the other end of the spectrum where a 17-year-old who isn't too bright is somehow found himself dating a 13-year-old that is. So,
Senator Lehman?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if now's the right time or till you wait till you get through all of it, but I'm just going to register my objection to having that in as an exception.
Certainly.
And, and I'll, so when the time is appropriate to, amend the amendment, I'll be doing that.
Representative Mackey, I think, had a comment, too.
Yeah, I have the same feeling as Senator Lehman. I appreciate taking care of the kidnapping because I was going to object to that, too. As far as, extending it to unclassified felonies and then exempting serious crimes such as sexual abuse and kidnapping against a child, I don't know, makes a whole lot of sense. So the kidnapping one's gone. The sexual abuse of a minor one, I have problems with that being an exception also. The one I do feel very strongly about being an exception, Mr. Chairman, is the misconduct involving a controlled substance. I think it would be pretty presumptuous of us to really believe that a young person could not be amenable to treatment should they violate this section. Not being a crime against a person, that kind of thing, I think that definitely should be one exempted, but the sexual abuse of a minor, the point that Representative Porter brings up, I guess not having been real close to this type of language before, if there was a forcible rape taking place by a 17-year-old and a 13-year-old, no old statutory, no nothing, it was a rape, they would be charged with sexual assault, not with sexual abuse of a minor, right? Is that correct?
I would think so,
okay.
Yeah.
what the representative is saying is that this would be a consensual sex, should there be consensual sex allowed by statute, which there's not, between a 17-year-old and a 13-year-old, and not necessarily a forcible rape or a rape that would qualify as a sexual assault. Is that right?
Ryan would be better, Representative Porter would be better able to answer that than I.
The understanding that A, B, and C, and A is gone, I would request that it be gone, but B and C are exceptions within the whole body of unclassified felonies to being automatically waived. So all unclassified felonies under this new version of this amendment would be automatic waiver situations with two exceptions. One, the sexual abuse of a minor, which is not forcible rape, is that statutory rape where the 3 years difference. And the single C is the single sale of a substance with the same kind of provision. I can't remember exactly what the ages are. I can look it up, but it's a 19-year-old with a statute.
A person at least 3 years.
3 years, yeah, 3 years. An 18 or 19-year-old to a person 3 years.
Right. In this context, a 16 or 17-year-old. We're talking about minors.
Yeah.
To a person at least 3 years younger.
Yeah. So that would be that single sale to somebody that's only difference in age of a couple, 3 years. With that, that all other unclassified felonies would be waived automatically. And any unclassified or any Class A felony that was a crime against a person would be automatically waived. And arson in the first degree would be automatically waived.
You're deleting the except kidnapping
yes,
again?
Yes, that's under the same provision as A. Uh-huh.
So we delete?
Just like that.
Delete all the exceptions down here?
No, just delete the kidnapping portion.
I guess my question,
arson is still in.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go right ahead, Jim.
I understand what the amendment says and how it relates to the bill. My question was the actual charge of sexual abuse of a minor in the first degree involves sexual penetration, but it's not a forcible rape, which would be probably charged as a sexual assault.
That is a correct statement.
Okay. The situation we're talking about, a sexual abuse of a minor in the first degree, involves what could be consensual sex, being it legal or not, between two young people, less than 13?
Well, if they are 3 years difference in age.
Right.
A 16-year-old or 17-year-old.
Yeah, they cannot have reached 14.
Aging with someone who was under 13 years of age.
Right, 12-year-old.
I mean, that's a firm.
Under 13?
Under
being
13.
16 years of age or older, 16 years of age or older, the offender engages in sexual penetration with a person who is under 13 years of age.
Okay. Then, Mr. Chairman,
mm-hmm.
That further clarifies then that I, like Senator Lehman, had a very strong objection to that being an exception to the rule then.
Okay. Well, this will give you a further definition, Jerry, that you might want to read through too. Well, let's take this one at a time because we're starting to get on to too many exceptions right now. First off, you've moved the amendment, I assume, Representative Porter.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the amendment.
There has been objection raised for purposes of discussion, and as part of that discussion, you have suggested an amendment to the amendment, and that is to delete parenthetical capital A down to the word age and the semicolon, I guess, there.
The entire verbiage under large A.
Right. And then renumber B to A
That's correct.
C to B. And then going down the page, when we get to the parenthetical 2, we leave the words, that is a Class A felony and a crime against a person, and put a semicolon at that point, deleting all of the words except kidnapping prosecuted under Alaska statute in which the victim was a child under the age of 18 years of age.
That's correct.
And that's your amendment to the amendment. Is there objection to the amendment to the amendment?
Just a question.
Go ahead, Representative Mack.
So that, I didn't understand where you said moving it down, or that just completely eliminates kidnapping as an exception to the rule. An automatic waiver would apply to a kidnapping case.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. No objection.
Okay. The original amendment is before us now as amended. Are there other amendments that would be suggested?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lehman.
I move amendments to this amendment to delete the new 1A. It's on our sheets as 1B, but it's the new 1A, I guess. Mm-hmm. Sexual abuse of a minor in the first degree.
And there's objection to that
for
purposes of discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I personally have no problem with this and several other inclusions that aren't here. What I view my role as is trying to present to you something that I believe that I'll be able to get passed on the floor of the House.
Sure.
I think that there's an awful lot of very good law in this bill, whether this stays in or not. So with that in mind, I would just offer that what we're talking about here is an automatic waiver, not an exclusion to the potential for a waiver. If a crime in this category occurred and it was an egregious offense, prosecutors could seek a waiver. And under the provisions of this bill, if that person was believe that we've now construed our 14, 15, 16, or 17, the burden would be on the minor to prove that he or she is not rehabilitatable. Situation.
Sure.
So I'd hate to see us lose the bill, lose the vote on the House. Here, I spoke, for what it's worth, I spoke with the bill sponsor, and it was my understanding that he didn't have a problem with this exception.
Right. Representative Mackey.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I failed to see where the strong objection might be coming from on that particular. Can we have a brief at ease off the record?
Certainly, we're off record. We're back to order again. All parties are present. Representative Porter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move to amend my amendment by adding the provision to be worded by Jack to make automatically waived.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt you, but we do have a different motion, and that is Senator Lehman's motion to strike.
He has a motion to strike this.
Oh.
That's to amend your amendment to strike the new letter A.
Well, if the Senator would remove his motion, I think I could clear the whole thing up in one motion.
Well, I will, with the consent of the group, withdraw my motion with the understanding I'm going to place it again if it doesn't do that.
That's right. Okay, the motion is withdrawn. Representative Porter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that I replace this amendment with conceptually language to be constructed by Mr. Chenoweth, that automatically being waived are unclassified felonies and Class A felonies, both of which are against a person.
And accepting therefrom an unclassified misconduct involving a controlled substance.
But that's not
I think
right.
that is automatically excluded.
Yeah. By your definition.
By my definition.
Yeah. Okay. Is everyone comfortable with that definition? Margot.
Just
the arson.
Right. We need.
Well, we should
then,
include the arson.
Then
I believe
we need to go back and pick
that
up.
Yeah.
Right. Can you draft an amendment that would have of arson in the first degree, Jack? And you understand the concept that we're talking about? Is there anyone who disagrees with the concept? Under discussions, Representative Mackey.
Just so that I understand, that the only exception, I guess, would be a drug offense. Misconduct involving a controlled substance in the first degree is the only unclassified felony that would not be automatically waived into adult court.
Correct.
Because all other unclassified felonies are offenses against a person.
Against a person, that's
with,
right.
And also, the only other one that is included in addition to that would be arson in the first degree.
Yes.
As an automatic waiver.
Yes.
Okay.
Is that your understanding, Margo? Your understanding, Jack?
Okay. Just to be absolutely sure,
Representative Porter,
we're also automatically waiving Class A felonies against a person.
That are crimes against
right.
a person.
Right, and that was included in your amendment.
Right.
You read the whole
okay.
thing.
Just.
Okay. Any further discussion on the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment as proposed? No objection, the amendment passes. What else need we take up? I'd like to note for the record, Senator Donnelly had included within his proposed amendment a provision involving 4710.080B, wherein it would modify and change the manner in which waiver occurred regarding a minor who was at least 14 years old and involved himself or herself in an offense involving a firearm. That actually, again, is new language that goes beyond that which was contained in either bill. And again, it's outside the parameters, I believe, of this committee. Not that it's not a good idea, but it's one that I don't think, I'll put it this way, as chairman, I'm going to rule that we cannot take that up. And if I'm not mistaken, Jack, you could please correct me if I'm wrong. We have accomplished the substance of the amendments that Senator Donnelly had recommended, yes, in the rest of his amendment.
Apart from that.
Apart from the youth firearms. Advisory thing and the firearms things that are actually outside our parameters. David did a lot of work on this, and I wanted to say thank you to him today, but he's not here to do that. And I appreciate the effort put in by all parties here. It's been very good. Is there anything further that that you or your House members would like to bring up to Representative Porter?
I believe we still have to resolve the records sections.
Well, you've got a number of other sections that are less significant than this, but important in terms of
resolved. Go ahead.
Came in on the House bill that
we
were not in the Senate.
Yeah, go right ahead. You could maybe start listing them for us. Oh, yeah. I had a list here of things that we've already adopted.
Right. And the other things that you went to the respective leadership on had to do with.
Mm-hmm.
Went to the things that were left on the table from the first meeting.
Here's this.
Sections 14, 17, 18.
Okay.
Are they records?
Where are we going to start?
13. No, that. Yeah, gee, 11, 12.
Which one do you want to start on, Ryan?
13?
I can't figure out where we should. Where do the records sections start?
In the House version?
Yeah.
14, 17, and 18.
Okay.
Having to do with the sealing of records of criminal proceedings there at the very bottom of 14. And then 17 and 18 was the approach recommended from the Department of Law that was adopted in the House version that essentially revises the current law on handling of records by splitting it between how the court records are to be handled. That's 4710090 in the House version, Section 17, and how the agency department records, if you will, are to be handled. That's 4710093, Section 18 of the House bill. The Senate's version only speaks, as I recall, to the first part of that, and then makes a number of changes as to the handling of public records in the context of current 090 without making that distinction between court records and agency records that the Department of Law had recommended. The differences that remain now are largely because the House took and expanded the content of the bill to pick up things beyond what the Senate had in it on the basis of recommendations from chiefly the Prosecutor's Office, the Department of Health and Social Services, and I don't know who else you heard from.
The provisions I had in my notes that we had not yet approved, but that held for further consideration, we've now taken up and resolved provisions relating to waiver of juvenile jurisdiction and generally to exercise court jurisdiction over juvenile. That's sections 4, 7, and 11, isn't it?
Of the House bill?
Of the,
yep.
Senate bill.
I'm sorry. Oh. And House bill 11, 13, and 15.
That we're done with?
13 and 15. I think so, yeah.
Well, I think we are, but I'm not sure. I wanted to make sure of that.
The House bill contains a lot of material that I think in the 11 through 13 and 15, a lot of new material that the Senate did not consider on informal handling of juveniles, based largely on the fact that there is no law to cover this. The department has, department and the court have generally moved in areas where there is no explanation of what is involved in informal adjudication, informal resolution of matters by the department. And so the House bill, section 11, 12, and 13. 11 we've covered, 12 and 13 and 15 pick up references to how informal resolution or informal action on these things should be taken care of. There is no comparable provision. There are no comparable provisions in the Senate bill because the Senate didn't focus on that issue at all.
Right. Is Section 12 in the House bill still under consideration?
Yes. It's all of these that had to do with things that showed up only in the House bill and not in the Senate one.
For the area that we're talking about right now, is Section 11, 12?
Well, 11, you have. I think it's fair to say that you've handled in the action that you took at the outset of the meeting.
So yes. We've adopted 11 in effect?
In effect.
Okay.
You've adopted a version that covers 11, what the automatic waiver issue
okay.
is.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Can we go through those section by section?
Please do.
And then we can take action individually. I guess my first question is, what is in the House version in Section 12 that's not in the Senate version, and what effect does that have on it?
Section 12 in the House version has no direct counterpart in the Senate version. It essentially sets out for the first time in 4710 some more definite explanation of what is involved in informal resolution of matters by referencers to the state agency, chiefly the Department of Health and Social Services. Right now, that agency has no guidance from the legislature in law on these points, and so it's moved. Essentially, what we're trying to do, I think, is codify what has been, I understand, to have been agency practice in this area, to legitimize it, if you will. 13 is an extension of that, essentially authorizing informal resolution. It's going on now, as I understand. It handles the bulk of most of the matters involving minors. The Division of Family and Youth Services is handling of most matters involving minors. And 15 goes to the question of the burden of proof to be shown, or the standard and burden of proof to be shown.
Yes. Can I ask a question? Are these tied in or are these separate?
Well, they all tie back to 4710. They are different topics within that subject matter.
Okay. Within that, then, Mr. Chairman, I would move that the committee adopt the House section, House version section 12 and 13.
Page
9, section 12. Page 10, section 13.
Line 7 on page 11.
Yes.
Literally, what we're doing is just setting up procedures in an area where there's never been procedures before.
Now, I assume this was offered by the department, right? Is that right? Yes. It was offered by the department.
Elmer likes this.
Well, that's enough to scare me.
No.
That's scary. If Elmer likes it, right?
No, he's an old friend. Any objection to the motion to adopt House Sections 12, 13, and 14.
The motion was just 12.
Oh, 12 and 13, wasn't it? Yeah, because 14 is a new subject.
Uh-huh.
12 and 13. There being no objection, 12 and 13 are adopted by the committee.
The Senate passed 5 in its subsection I. Goes to the question of the who shall bear the burden of showing that a minor treatment. I-2 covers allegations that a minor had previously been involved or had been involved in previous adjudication or conviction. Now, the second part of that falls out of the bill because we don't have anything in the language that you've adopted that ties this operation to previous adjudication. So we're really focusing on, in this last part, the question of the burden of showing that a minor is amenable to treatment. The Senate's approach to it is in on page 5 in I-1. The House approach to it is a little bit more expanded. It begins on page 11 in section 15, going over the top of page 12. My recollection of the discussions there is that the House attempted to show both or wanted to include both a reference to what the standard of proof would be by preponderance of the evidence, and generally rework the burden of proof to make it a little bit clearer as to when each party is to have the burden. That is to say, when the state is to have the burden, which is in most cases, or when the minor is expected to carry the burden. That would be the commission of an offense that is an unclassified felony or Class A felony that is a crime against a person. The minor is rebuttably presumed not to be amenable to treatment under the current sections of law and has the burden of proof of showing that the minor is amenable to treatment.
That's very important to the whole guts of this bill, because if the burden is on the minor to establish this, then that's the minor that has to come forward with the psychological reports and all the rest of it. If it's the state that has to come forward with this burden of proof, the minor can sit there and say, no, I'm not going to do the psychological reports.
Precisely.
It's much better to have that burden on the other side. Representative Mackey.
I don't know, this might be a lack of total understanding of this whole bill, but I understand your statement there. What about in a case where Say it's a indigent minor, or, I mean, are they having to go out and, what if they can't afford it?
All minors are assumed to be indigent anyhow. They either, if their parents don't come forward and provide counsel, I mean, even if the folks are just having a dispute with the kid, the court will provide counsel.
They have the ability to have that should they want to. I mean, should they want to make their case that they're amenable to treatment?
Well, immediately. They have to have it.
All right.
They cannot represent.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is there any objection to provisions provided in House 14, Section 14, and House Section 15?
Not 14. 15.
Just 15 only at this time? What did we do with 14?
We'll come back to it.
We'll come back to it? Okay. House provisions, Section 15. There being no objection, Section 15 is adopted. Before we jump on, let me revert back, if I could, for a minute, Jack. When we adopted Representative Porter's amendment, there was probably cleanup language necessary in the amendment that you had prepared called AA.2.
Right.
And I just wanted to make sure that that cleanup language also got taken care of there. You know what I mean by that?
Right. We will replace the language in the current House passed bill that relates to automatic waiver for murder in the first degree, attempted murder in the first degree, or murder in the second degree, with reference to an offense specified in the section. It being understood, offense specified in this section means an unclassified or Class A felony that is a crime against a person or arson in the first
I was referring to those two lines as just cleanup stuff, which would be necessary on the adoption of the substance of that page, which was Representative Porter's amendment. And, of course, the following lines also would then be necessary, which you state an offense specified under.
We haven't adopted that amendment, so...
Pardon?
We haven't adopted that amendment.
No, we adopted the guts of it, and what this does, it just cleans up language so that this makes sense in the middle. That's what you were just saying. See, when you look at, up here at the top, for an offense specified in this subsection. For an offense specified in this subsection. It refers to this subsection.
But have we adopted this amendment?
No, we adopted yours, which was...
Right.
The amendment that Representative Porter offered was is technically an amendment to that. You really need to do something with that if you want to make it clean.
That's what I meant.
Okay. You need to adopt that amendment as amended by the language I read you, unclassified or Class A felony, that is a crime against a person. Or
that's what I meant, that you to make Representative Porter's amendment work.
Right. All the rest of that has to.
All the rest of this has to, otherwise the thing gets out of sync with itself, so to speak, as far as its wording.
I would consider that as a friendly amendment. Yeah.
Okay. I would move that we adopt Chenoweth 41294 AA.2 where necessary to clean up the language previously adopted by the committee in Representative Porter's amendment. So that there is no conflict between these two. That's my intent.
I actually understand that.
But to Jack, that's the question. That's scary, too.
Yeah. Jack has no problem, right? Okay. Being no objection, it is adopted. I'm sorry I interrupted your thought processes. I think you were moving on to Section 15 or something.
We just passed that.
We had skipped over 15.
No, we skipped over 14.
14.
We just did 15.
I knew I was close.
14, 17, and 18, I think now, are what we have to...
Right. 14, 17, and 18 are the next group of materials in the House bill. And the comparable Senate provisions...
Sections 5, 8, and 9 I had in my notes, yeah.
Are they tied together? Let me just take a quick look. Five of the Senate bill and 14 of the House bill are virtually identical. Omitting only from the Senate's version the additional language that covers previous adjudications, which we don't have in the House bill.
Which we don't have in the version that we're working on.
Don't have in the version based on what you're working on. The Senate bill, as you recall, took care of, had a category of minors 14 and above who had done something previously and then were coming back around for a second time.
Right.
So in the Senate bill, there are a number of references to adjudicated a delinquent, previously adjudicated a delinquent or convicted as an adult, and the earlier adjudication or conviction was whatever it was. Those are not in
the House
bill, and the notion of previous adjudication is not in what you've talked about, I the outset.
What we've adopted.
Right.
So taking that into consideration, I suppose that we can pull something together that looks substantially more like the House amendment, making necessary cross-reference changes, reference changes and that sort of thing, if that's what you want me to do.
Would it be proper to then move to the adoption of Section 14 from the House version? Which is, as I understand Jack's description, the same as the Senate version, except it omits the part that...
Previous offenses.
...we don't need anymore.
Right. And would be modified further there on lines 28 and 29 by striking out the references to murder first, attempted
yes.
murder first, and substituting a cross-reference back to the particular offenses.
Yes, that,
we talked
that
about
would
earlier.
Be necessary. Yes, Representative Mackey.
That would automatically be done. Because of the previous amendment that
right.
was passed,
that's
right?
Right.
As part
well,
of
I mean, this would be technical cleanup language.
Clean.
Yeah.
So it would appear so that way.
So it would just adopt Section 14 then, and then that doesn't conflict with... I mean, otherwise, they're the same. Section 5.
Well, they are with the exception of previous offenses, and I don't know how significant of a concern that is.
We've adopted language now for the automatic waiver. The previously adjudicated was a portion of your automatic waiver. We don't have that in our automatic waiver
yeah,
provision now.
Understood.
So
I think it's Mark's next at this point. I don't really see any real significant shifting. You have any objection to that one?
Mm-hmm.
There being no objection, 14 is adopted.
And the House version, right?
Yeah, we're working off of House version. If we try and bounce back and forth, we're really going to go nuts up here. So.
Yeah.
Now we've got 17, which is records, and 18, which is, I think, disclosure.
Also, both have to do with records and access to the disclosure.
Right. Well, taking up Section 17, House first, can you give us a description of what it's doing?
It modifies the, or overhauls current 4710090. 4710090 now collectively speaks to all records. And what the Department of Law had proposed, that they separate out court records and deal with them separately, from agency records, agency being understood to mean generally
mm-hmm.
health and social services. 090 focuses on court records and generally tracks current law, the substance of current law, down to the top of page 15. And my recollection is that the House version there, beginning at about, well, I guess the very bottom of 14, beginning with a sentence at the end on line 30, a person with a legitimate interest in the inspection of an official record maintained by the court includes a victim who suffered physical injury or whose real or personal property was damaged as a result of an offense that was the basis of an adjudication or modification of disposition. If the victim knows the identity of the minor, identifies the minor or the offense to the court, and certifies that the information is being sought to consider or support a civil action against the minor or against the minor's parents or guardians under 3450.020, which is the civil recovery for property damage statute, the court shall, subject to 1261, allow the victim to inspect and use the following records, and it enumerates the particular records that may be obtained by the victim. Now, this is a narrower...
Why in the world would we want to do something that squirrely?
Instead of just making a public record? Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, under this section, unless I'm mistaken, the victim has to already know the victim, the minor's identity. And has to certify that the information is being sought to consider or support a civil action against the minor. And then, and only then, is the court allowed to give them very limited access to certain limited files. Why would we want to hamstring victims
well,
in that
fashion?
Well, you did.
Fashion? You did. The Senate version, on the very at the top of page 10, in the same context, says, if the victim knows the identity of the minor, identifies the minor, and I'm on line 4 and 4, if the victim knows the identity of the minor, identifies the minor to the court, and certifies that the information obtained from inspection of the record is being sought to support a civil action against the minor or against the minor's parents or guardians and so forth, the court may not refuse to allow the victim to inspect the records of the adjudication proceeding and may not refuse permission for the victim to use the information in connection with the civil action.
Well, that's much broader than what the House has. Margo, did you want to comment?
I wonder if I might clarify the public records
portion.
So.
Did you take a look at the Senate section here about this particular line?
That's what I said. Senate's much broader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The intent here was to accommodate the executive branch's concerns and also bring in Senator Halford's concerns. And this part is meant to preserve Senator Halford's desires. And it was he was concerned that there should be access to this information by the victims and that there be a means of doing that. And that's what this does. And it was to his satisfaction.
On the Senate side.
Correct, correct. Yeah. And so
the House version you're talking about.
Right. This, the House version is picking up Senator Halford's language and what he expressed, what he wanted.
Well, I thought that Jack just indicated that the House version was a narrower construction
in terms of
that same phrase as far as access to records.
In what respect is it narrower?
If the victim knows the identity and so forth, the court shall allow the victim to inspect, this is the House version now,
right,
shall allow the victim to inspect and use the following records and information: a petition filed under AS 4710.010A1 seeking to have the court declare the minor a delinquent, a petition filed under 080 seeking to have the court modify or revoke the minor's probation, a petition filed under 060 requesting the minor to find the minor is not amenable to treatment, and the court judgment or order entered with respect to any of those three.
Right.
There is no comparable limitation on which records may be obtained in the Senate version.
The Senate version, it's wide open to the victim.
What is supposed to be different between the two is the equivalent of a pre-sentence report, if you will. And, in fact, it was an oversight to allow access to that by the victim. We currently don't let victims see adult pre-sentence reports. And so what the Department of Health and Social Services was able to do was to identify the records that are in these juvenile proceedings that are going to give the information that the victim wants, that Senator Halford wants the victim to have access to, and exclude the super sensitive interviews about prior sexual abuse that the defendant or suspect has been involved in, what his uncle did to him when he was 4 years old.
Yeah,
or
right, okay, okay.
So that was supposed to be the difference.
I can certainly go along with that, but I guess both sides have it, but why in the world are we placing the burden on the victim to know the identity of the juvenile? Representative?
The victim has access to the juvenile hearing. I mean, if they have been victimized and it's adjudicated, then they will have the information as to who it is because they were there. So it's just a matter of walking in with that information saying, I want to see that file. Right now, they could sit there and hear it, but they couldn't go get the file.
Were they even allowed to hear it under juvenile court?
Recently, the legislature amended it so that victims can now sit in, they're the only ones allowed in the otherwise closed juvenile proceedings, and so they will have that information.
Well, since all victims would have that opportunity, why would we need the victim to be able to somehow establish that he knows the identity? It just seems like an odd thing to leave in there. But
well, it's in both bills.
It's in both bills.
Yeah, I realize that.
Mr. Chairman, the court system was concerned about people coming in and saying, I don't know anything. Would you please do all my work for me? And
okay.
Then they started talking fiscal.
I'm not going to rewrite it. I was just
okay.
Needing
yeah.
A little educating
it
here.
It is meant
appreciate
to
that.
Be useful. It is meant to be, all of this public records part is meant to be as open as possible and as practical as possible. And there was a tremendous number of hours spent on it. And
understood.
These are reasonable questions you're asking.
Representative Mackey.
Yeah, I would just move the House version, Section 17.
House version, Section 17 has been moved. Is there objection? No objection. 17 is adopted. Section 18, disclosure of agency records. Jack?
Margo's here. Is this virtually the same?
This is what the executive branch came up with that will allow disclosures for the first time, for example, to the high school that you've got a problem, a very dangerous kid, allows disclosures to newspaper reporters if the minor isn't identified. And they will finally say how much we can go public with, and
this is the section, Mr. Chairman, that addresses the problem in Anchorage where the police department couldn't tell the school who the kid was that was selling guns on their own school grounds as a member of the school. And second, to overcome the assistant AG's letter of speculation that said that a police officer couldn't even tell the facts of a reporter if that officer knew that a juvenile was involved in that crime.
I had those noted as having been held at our last meeting.
Yes, I had them.
We haven't taken care of them yet?
Let me just ask one more change.
Yeah, go right ahead, Jack.
And that is, the House bill, but not the Senate, offers a definition of the term victim that ties back to the victim's right bill that was measured. May I include that? It appears in Section 20 as the second definition in the House bill. The Senate bill just didn't pick up on it, though we mentioned victims in it.
Okay.
Is there any
move the adoption of Section 20 of the House bill?
Is there any objection? There being no objection, Section 20 of the House bill is adopted by the committee. Now, going back to Sections 5 and 7 of the House bill, Section Section 5 talks about while on probation. Unless that's existing language, right?
Yeah, it's existing.
We go over to the next page, and it talks about to participate in a program of remedial education when ordered by the court if the defendant is a minor convicted as an adult.
The three sections, Sections 4, 5, and 7,
oh, yes,
all
four
tie
is a
in
house
together.
Section.
And I think we may have touched upon this at that first meeting. There is no comparable Senate provision. This all came in the House, and I think it was even after the House Judiciary Committee had the bill, wasn't it?
It's a floor amendment.
This was actually a Finance Committee amendment.
In any event, the concern here, as I recall, the discussion had to do with what do you do with defendants, minor defendants, who are being treated, who have been adjudicated and convicted as an adult. What do you hold out to them in the way of improving their education? One assumes that they are still amenable to some sort of formal education. And I think the language here, it's fair to say, is a compromise between what the sponsor of this edition wanted in all three cases and what it was possible to get from the Department of Corrections, who would have the custody of these minors.
This is where we talk about a remedial education program that they have to have, but only if it's made available by the Department. This is really conjecture. I mean, we're talking about ordering them to do something if they have something available.
That's right. Let's see. 55015A was in the context of...
Anybody wish to entertain a motion to adopt either 4, 5, or 7?
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me during our previous discussion that Senator Donnelly had some concerns that we were either jeopardizing the adult program or...
Yes, he expressed those to me, too. You're correct in recalling that.
Remember that discussion?
I don't remember that discussion.
No, I think he was concerned about equal protection provisions also, that this young person's been tried and convicted as an adult, yet merely because of their age status, they would be required to receive an education where the person who's 18 years of age actually is an adult and tried as an adult going into the same facility would not have that mandated program available. But because of the if thrown in there, that if the department has it available, I didn't really think it made that much difference. But
4, 5, and 7 are...
Chairman,
Representative Mackey, certainly.
Can I ask your indulgence and ask perhaps one of the Finance Committee members, staff who are here, maybe they can answer why that was put in, perhaps Representative Brown's staff?
Yes, please. If somebody's,
in case there is a reason.
Somebody's here, you bet. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dan Austin. I'm a legislative assistant to Representative Brown, who was a sponsor of that particular amendment on remedial education. And I know there's been some confusion about the purpose and intent. Basically, it's discretionary on the parts of the court and the department. The court may order remedial education as a condition of probation or a good time earning or additional programs. The department, and maybe you correct me if I'm wrong, the Department of Corrections will provide that if they have the capacity to provide it. And I really don't believe there's any reason to suspect that would have any effect on what's offered adults or not offered adults.
Can I ask a question?
Certainly, please.
Can't the court already do that anyway?
I'm not sure. I'd have to defer to the Department of Law.
Well, the court could make the recommendation, but it would be up to the department to make a decision as to whether or not they would provide it.
If they don't offer it anyway, then they're not going to.
Which
be
they're
going to.
Right.
That's so it's not necessary.
In my opinion. As long as that if is a big if to me. As long as that if is in there, we're really not telling them to do anything.
Right.
We're just saying. It's kind of like intent language. We'd sure feel good, and it'd be nice if you'd kind of do this, if you could, please, you know?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, the other thing, the other thing is the reason that this is also one of the reasons that we wanted to see it in statute is that if the court were to order that, then it would become as any other provision of sentencing or condition of sentencing or parole that an adult prisoner would have to fulfill. In other words, a juvenile within the adult correctional system, in order to earn his good time or his probation or his parole, would have to fulfill the conditions of his the order. In this case, if the judge had ordered remedial education,
yes.
So it's a way of it's a carrot and stick kind
sure.
of deal.
And it basically is the same thing in all three provisions, from what I can tell.
First has to do with sentencing. The second has to do with probation, and Section 7 has to do with revocation of probation.
Right.
The third has to do with revocation of parole.
That's right. So they're all three the same, basically the same statement, each one taking it at a different stage in the prisoner's occupation.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move those sections.
Object?
Well, I'm just going to object for
discussion?
A second. Mr. Chairman, I don't think, I appreciate the explanation. I don't know that it really does much. It's not one of those issues that I'm going to die over And I think we just ought to recognize that it's not going to do much. And I think the judge can do that anyway. But anyway, I'll withdraw my objection.
Well, I'm the one who objected.
Oh, then
I'm maintaining
too.
It. We'll call a roll call vote.
Senator Tanner?
No.
Senator Donnelly? Senator Lehman?
No.
Representative Porter?
Yes.
Representative Mackey?
Yes.
Representative Hammond's absent. 2-2.
Amendment fails. What have we got left now, Jack?
How does it?
It's not adopted.
A procedural question. I haven't been on a lot of conference committees, but I guess how does something get in? I mean, how do you take something out if it's already in one version or the other?
Well, you have to take each section, which we've done, and as we've moved along, we have brought a motion on each section.
Yeah.
At least according to my notes, we always did, and that for that section to remain within the bill. It has to be adopted by the committee.
The other
did that vote have the effect of deleting these sections?
Yes. The motion was to adopt them. By failing to adopt them, they're deleted.
What if there wasn't a motion?
Well, there would have had to have been because we've got a difference between the two bills. That's why I had to raise them again.
I withdraw my motion.
You know, that's right. Because if there was an emotion to delete, it would have failed 2-2 also.
No, there has to be a motion.
But it has to be an affirmative motion, which is a problem. Yeah.
Right. That's affirmative. I mean to delete.
Maybe Mark Hanley, maybe.
I show another point of difference in the applicability provision, Section 12 of the Senate passed bill.
Yeah, and Section 21 of the House bill.
The provisions go to the same purpose. Again, the Senate's differs in that it makes reference to previous adjudications or convictions. Those have been deleted from the approach we're taking in this.
I'd move House 21.
Careful. Clean up the votes first.
I think we've already agreed.
I think we have agreed basically on this one. I had it down reference to previous adjudications.
Yeah, right.
Let them move theirs. I want to look down one of the Senate signs. Let's move that one.
Well, the Senate version had except in it, didn't it? Oh, to the extent constitutionally permissible. Now, that's an interesting
question. We had to fudge, Senator. We had to fudge. It was short, and we didn't know what to do with it.
That's a contradiction.
Well, no, it just says we kind of want to do it if we really can.
That's right.
Yeah. Often used. Is there objection to adopting the House version?
21.
Or in other words, Section 21. I don't hear a lot of protest from my amigo over here. There being no objection, Section 21 House is adopted.
Did you want me to?
Huh? No. If I want you to, I'll grab your foot.
And the only other piece
not
of this...
sexual assault.
It couldn't be
other piece
him,
of this,
I don't know.
The only other piece of this puzzle, Senator, that I think is not resolved is this question on the bottom of page 3 of the House passed bill. We got into a discussion about this, and you're going to have to refresh my memory, and a difference of opinion over whether to include this addition in or not include that addition in. It was clear that the committee was willing to take and accept the House-passed version of A1, the additional language there.
Page 3?
On page 2. Hmm. But we got into a difference of opinion as to page 3.
On 10?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, we got down to where we're talking about the dwelling and whether or not the kid could live in the dwelling.
Happens in a third degree if the person resides in a dwelling. Neither is a fine.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Mackey.
That would mean one of two things. Either that the person that had been adjudicated can't stay there, or the individual that owns the place can't have a gun.
Or there's written authorization. Right? Unless the person has written authorization.
Does anybody know why that in there?
Question arose, I think, from Health and Social Services.
I think it did. Kathy's here, too. She could give us some information.
Well,
Kathy Tibbles? I'm sorry. Did you want to say? Go right ahead.
I think that the provision is in here so as to be consistent between adults and juveniles who have been waived as adults.
Right.
That is a requirement of an adult convicted of a felon.
Yes, it is. And that's all we were trying to do is make them consistent. But Kathy, you had some comment you wished.
Yes, our concern, Mr. Chairman, had to do with the fact that it, in instances of foster care placements or in parental placements, it isn't just penalizing the minor who's been adjudicated. It also is penalizing the person who owns the home, and supposedly the minor is still under supervision during that period. And so we had real concerns about loss of foster parents, whether we'd, if we couldn't get a parent to relinquish their gun, were we not going to be able to return a child home? Or are we going to have to remove a child if a parent had it? How are we going to monitor those? And, you know, we've had enough difficulties with regulations controlling possession of firearms by foster parents and trigger guards and those kinds of things. We're really concerned about losing possibilities for placement for kids.
Yes, Representative Mackey.
Can I, Brian?
No, go ahead.
So is that the reason why the language in there, unless there's written permission then?
Well,
because I'd be concerned in the rural areas like I represent. I mean,
I think there's an out.
It'd be pretty hard to find a home that didn't have a firearm in it.
Right, and our concern, well, actually, we didn't include the written authorization that was there. And we are concerned about being able to obtain that. We could maybe get it from a judge, although it's very time-consuming to go in and ask for yet another order to allow such a thing. And it does allow for the chief of police in a municipality, but then you've got inconsistencies. Maybe nobody in Anchorage ever gets authorization, and everybody in Unalaska does. And we support the first provision with regard to treating kids as adults, but we really have concerns about the residents, and we're just hoping that portion could be, that they could be deleted from that section. And I believe there was some discussion prior about entering some phrasing that if they had been adjudicated when they reached 18 or 19 and were no longer legally under supervision, that at that point they no longer could reside in a residence that had. I don't recall exactly.
Representative Mackey.
But once they turn 18, they're not going to be a ward of the
right,
state
and
anyway.
Then we don't,
they're going to fall under the adult guidelines.
Right.
I mean, that was your concern that you have was my first blush when I looked at this thing. I was going, you know, why penalizing somebody that might own a gun for owning their own home, who may want to do a good thing by being a foster parent or for whatever reason. I mean, process elimination, I mean, when you don't have that many to start with, you eliminate some right off the bat, then it causes problems.
Right. Mm-hmm. And yet, we're talking about a person adjudicated a delinquent minor for conduct that would constitute a felony if committed by an adult. We're still talking about juvenile offenses here.
And in this case, we're talking about property crimes or anything.
Right. We're not talking about the ones that we have limited. Joe?
Mr. Chairman, call your attention to the legal opinion at the back of the packet on the Senate bill side. Mr. Chenoweth had recommended a couple of possible remedies to the concerns raised by the department. Memo dated March 24th.
Oh, I see. Take it down to those offenses involving the misuse or possession of a prohibited weapon, a firearm. That's language probably not appearing in either bill, though, is it?
Well, I think it would be...
We're okay, I think, because we've got authority
to
take up this section.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, my concern is the concern the department has that they are having a hard time getting foster parents to begin with, especially in the rural areas of Alaska. Maybe in the urban areas of Alaska. I don't know how many homes don't have a firearm, especially one that's concealable, because all handguns are technically concealable. And if that further diminishes their ability to find responsible foster homes, then I have a problem with it, the way it's written.
Yes,
did we? Oh, it's back there on the second page. Okay.
Yeah, it's on there.
Yeah, we're okay.
Your alternative, of course, is just to repeal A-10.
In the Senate side?
There is no comparable provision in the Senate side.
So
What if we just leave it out?
Delete it or...
I think we can.
Make it less...
I think that
might be the better... Yeah, I mean, if the page covers deleting it, which would be the Senate's position, it wasn't there,
yeah.
Or from the Senate perspective, versus leaving it as it is in... as the House has passed it, or finding some
if we leave it as the House has passed it, it's going to cause Kathy problems.
Yeah. I'm wondering
which
if...
causes me problems, because
sure.
The intent...
Well, we wouldn't have to. If this kid was waived...
The delinquents?
Oh, then he falls under the adult classifications anyhow.
Yeah, right.
All this thing is, it's an attempt in the House version only to go one step further into juvenile law to rewrite a provision concerning other juvenile offenses that would have been an offense, a felony offense, had they been committed by an adult. And it's an attempt to do something about firearms, I guess, although they're not mentioning that. Okay, I just entertain a motion, then. You move to delete section
I
two.
I move to delete
House three. Section I, 2, page 2 and 3.
I guess, yeah, it's House section 2.
Part of 4. You'd already agreed to make the change on the bottom of page 2.
Okay, that's only House section 2, but on the bottom of page 3 only.
This section, subsection 10.
Yeah.
Subsection 10. Move to delete.
Well, delete, I think subsection 10 exists.
Move to delete the amended language.
Right, okay. Yeah, all right.
From subsection 10.
From subsection 10.
Within section 2.
We don't have the authority to do the other part.
No, I don't think so.
I was going to say.
My only concern is, does the secretary understand what we're talking about?
Do you understand?
Paragraph
10,
right?
Move to delete the...
Yep,
the
paragraph 10 on page 3. We're deleting the underlined language only. The new language. Delete the new language is the page 3, subparagraph 10. Any objection to Senator Lehman's motion? Being no objection, that is adopted, and that language is thereby deleted. That's it, isn't it, Jack?
There's one other, and I might have brought this up before and probably had it answered, but I just, since I saw it here now, I'm going to bring it up again. The House version takes effect September 1st, 1994, the Senate, 1993.
We took care of that.
And
we adopted the House effective date, 94.
We adopted the House. I guess the question is, why do we not go with an effective date that's sooner than that? And is there need for the department to adopt regulations or something to enact this? Is that why
I think there's quite a pile of both corrections, and
that
was the reason we were doing it.
Not if you agree to September 1st date. Then. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want it any later than that.
There was question that was even long enough time to
okay.
get
yeah.
Then I'll,
we're worried about that.
All right.
But we did. We've that's action already taken by the committee.
That's what I thought. I thought I'd brought it up with.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was there anything further?
I think we did it.
Margot, do you believe we've covered everything that you can think of? Danielle, are we all right? Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Do you want to decide whether you need revised physical notes? These are all at zero, with the exception of the court system. And.
We don't want anything but zero fiscal.
Anything should have went down after our action.
Every time we create a fiscal note over there, the Finance Committee rewrites everything we sent to them. So.
Sign that and pass it.
Delivered
to the.
I think it did. Was the court's fiscal note the same on the House version as the Senate version? That'll be proof that they never read anything.
Good shot.
It does look like it was lower on the Senate version.
Lower in
the Senate version?
You guys waved everybody but a pickpocket.
I know it.
All I know is we do good work.
What did I just sign here?
Copy.
Your resignation.
I didn't hear a huge cheer.
$5,000.
It couldn't have been a resignation.
That's the cover page for what has to go to your respective bodies, and you will receive copies of the CS before we do that.
Good.
I would like to draft a conference committee substitute and put a copy of it in each of your hands, and then if you're satisfied that it covers everything, if I run into any problems, I'll give you a call. I shouldn't, but if I do, I will. Yeah, you get a copy to each of you, and you can look it over, and then when you... If you agree that that's what you want, we'll run it final. And I don't know. We just produce one.
Yes.
And it goes to the House of Origin. Is that right?
Goes to the Senate, I think.
Right. The copy to the House, and then separate action after that by the respective bodies.
Could you give us a
section?
We need a.
So, just for the House version, at least, could you say Section 1 was adopted, Section 2 was amended, thus and so, Section 3.
Describing the changes.
Yeah, we'll need that over there too to sell it to our compadres also. So send the same thing to us.
It'll be easier for us.
That'll be available for a calendar tomorrow.
That's going to be easier for us.
No, we're at recess. How about tonight?
We are at recess. Yeah, we can yet read it across.
Yeah, can you hurry up?
I think you did great work, Jack. We all appreciate it very much.
Made all the decisions.
Oh, do you want that? Okay, sir.
And thank both of you guys. Yeoman duty.
Signature on that?
We are adjourned.
Yeah.